quite close together. How did you get on? How did you?
Oh, quite remarkably, yes, quite remarkably, yes.
Did depression? Did you get depression?
No, no, there was no depression. No, you were getting fed.
What kind of things might have upset you?
Well, the war was Germany was just progressing in the war going into Russia, and they were making good progress at that time, you know. And there was a chap working on the farm, a German, and he was called up into the Luftwaffe, a big chap. But that, as far as that, we had very little war news, apart from letters that were getting back, you know. And this time of the year, November, it was getting on towards November, and the weather suddenly turned for the, you know, it dropped 10 degrees in one night on the Russian front, and they were suddenly frozen in. But apart from that, like, we just carried on till the harvest was finished. We did it all by hand threshing, and it was all manual labour. And the bread was baked in the centre of the farmyard in a, well, it would be medieval, I would say, a stone igloo. Now, I've never seen a bakery like that. It was a stone igloo with a stone floor, and they used to put the pine leaves in, pine, set fire to it, and then rake it out, and had wooden shovels, and put the bread in baskets, wicker baskets. So it was like, you know, sort of that shape, like a bun shaped. And the bread was all baked like that, I think, for round about the village as well. Because he used to go to the miller with his corn, and we never got white bread. This was like a rye bread, you know, brown, but anything was acceptable. And I told you, he took me in, the first year the farmer took me into this, and I was just dressed in awful clothes, you know, just anything you could get hold of. He took me into this pub with him, and it was a pretty posh place, and the landlady said, "What's he then, a Pole or what?" And he was proud, he says, "Oh, he's an Englander." Out straight away.
Yeah, we've got this story actually. At the end of the day, when your working day was over, how did you keep yourselves occupied?
Well, we weren't locked up. We were in this sort of hut, and we were in contact with the Poles at the back. There was, well, they were half Poles, half Germans. They'd been the old Prussian. It was part of old Prussia, East Prussia. And the Poles had to wear a P on their clothes, you see, to mark them out. And we knew the neighbours, we were pretty friendly with them, and they used to use it like a YMCA, nip in for a cup of tea. They couldn't get tea or coffee or anything. If you had a jar of coffee, you know, a tin of coffee from the Red Cross, oh, they were overjoyed with that. But it wasn't very often we got the Red Cross, see. Now very infrequently. We went months in between. So it just went on.
Did anyone ever come to check on you from time to time? Since
no.
You had a small little outlet?
No, you were just left to the one guard. And of course, the one guard, his attitude changed from when he was under military command, and he had to be friendly, like, to sort of live with you. And he didn't check on us even on the farms. We just went up to the farms, and we were on our own, and we made our own way back. See, we weren't under any strict...
I think we established that you were so far away from any port or...
Oh, yes.
Other country, the thought of escape wasn't worth it.
Impossible. Well, I mean, the Russians by that, the Germans by that time, were about 14 miles off Moscow, you see, and that was thousands of miles we had to travel without any food or anything. And then, of course, well, the other way was right across Europe to blooming France. There was no way to get away. So we just carried on there till it started getting into winter. And then we were brought back to this Marienburg.
This is the stalagmite we have on the last tape.
Exactly, the one we left to go to the farms. And it was built, apparently, in the First War for First War prisoners. And the huts we were pushed into, of course, some of them weren't too bad, but the ones we were pushed into was ones sunk below the ground. There was just they were level with the ground, the top, and you went down into them, and you were sleeping on an earth bottom, and they were rat infested. And outside the door at night, you know, you floodlit in all these camps, and outside the door was a big, like, rain barrel, and that was your toilet through the night, see? And chaps, well, I don't know whether they were doing punishment duty or what, they used to walk down the cliff edge and just tip these over into the river in the morning every day. That was their job, just getting a long pine pole through them and carrying them away in the clogs. And it was mostly French prisoners in there. There was a few British, most French. And you were lined up on the roll call at night when you got your bread in lines of 20, see? And it was five men to a loaf. And it was the four loaves were handed out to the odd man. And if you got in the wrong lines working out, you tried to get with your mates and you got in the wrong lines, you were mixed in with about probably 20, 19 Frenchmen. And you had to follow them like a hawk to get your bit of bread off them, as he had it. But it was a rotten camp, that. And then we came back from there.
What were you doing in that camp? Did they give you work to do in the camp?
No, we were only waiting to get sent back to Graudenz.
That must have lowered your spirits to be moved back into there after being on the farm.
Oh, well, it wasn't a very long stay, probably about a week, if that. And in that time, from the first visit to that camp to the second, America had come into the war. See, well, that was a big difference.
It was the end of 1941?
Yes.
41.
Yes, the end of 1941. And coming back in the trucks, can't remember how long we were in the trucks, but you were shunted into sidings for the night, and, you know, military trains had our preference, and you were just shunted into sidings, and the frost used to come through to the inside of the truck, and all the inside of the truck was like ice, you know, with all the metal parts were white with the frost, and you just used to, it was your numbers, you were crammed in there, and you just huddled together for warmth, like. And then we eventually got back to Graudenz. And of course, it was getting into the Russian winter then, and we were more or less going out working in the cold then. And we were working on a German hospital, military hospital in the place. And the first job we'd had the year before was a VD clinic, see. Now, this time, they were building a soldier's home, you know, with a cinema in and seats and that. And they gave me the job putting doweling in the walls, holes for the doweling, for to put seating round, see. And I'm supposed to be making a hole this side, and I finish off with the one about a foot square, you know. So he yanked me off that. He said, "You don't go to that." And he said, carry the sand up. Well, he got two buckets and a pile of sand and carried up the stairs for the chaps who were building the projection cinema. See, they were building a box for the projection cinema. So, just for a bit of devilment, I had a cardboard top in the buckets and just a handful of sand on the top, and it was kind of, and of course they were running out of sand up there, and the guard started following us. He says, empty the buckets. I said, well, I'm tired walking up the steps, empty the buckets. Of course, just a handful of sand dropped out. Well, he butted me down the stairs with his rifle, you know, marched me straight off, and he says, 4 days close arrest. So the next morning I was marched into the military prison, and they put a notice up on the board: the following prisoner of war has been awarded, mind, I would rather had a slice of bread, but awarded 4 days close arrest for repeatedly working badly despite repeated admonition. So I've got it in the drawer there somewhere, the old.
And what did that entail, those 4 days? What did they do to you?
Well, they just locked you up in a cell. And you got a meal every third day. And the other 2 days, you just got your black coffee and two slices of bread in the morning, and two slices of bread and black coffee in the afternoon. And you're just sleeping on a wooden board with your one blanket, you know. And the cell had broken windows and was cold weather, but you just... And the only time you got out was for a few minutes in the morning to empty your slops and get
what were they kept in there?
In a metal chamber pot. That was the only contact you had with anybody, really, to talk to. That was your... There was quite a few friends in. And the fella next door to me, in the next cell to me, he was a German paratrooper that had dropped in on Crete. And he was doing punishment in there as well. So
their own men were put in this block as well?
Oh, their own men, yes. Yes. It was a military prison. See? And, of course, it was a long drag to go back. But you just accepted that as normal. All these queer conditions and that. Well, it was wartime, you just accepted it. So after that, well, you march back, and on the march back, of course, there was a big German battalion marching off to the Russian front with a band, and we had to make way for that, and then back into camp and back to normal living. Then after that, We had a roundabout Christmas. There was supposed to be chickenpox in the camp, and we were all quarantined. I forget how many days we had to stay in, but it was bitter cold. We didn't mind. And at that time, we got a Red Cross parcels. So we had plenty of food, and we didn't give a dang about anything like that. And the German guards outside, it was that bitter, they were going around with the top coat on and a big top coat over the top of that and their jack boots on. And over the top of the jack boots, they had like straw boots, big straw boots, because they couldn't stand the winter otherwise. Two lots of gloves. And there they were in the deep snow. It was about ankle deep of snow, and they're walking round. And the bread we used to get issued came from the cellar. It was an old First War Polish barracks, or might be German, that the Poles had taken over. And it was frozen solid, the bread. You couldn't cut it with a knife, so they had a whole hacksaw blade, an old hacksaw blade to cut your bread with and thaw it out. But it wasn't too bad there, really.
Were you warm in the huts?
Oh, yes, there was about 100 men sleeping in this one room. You know, three stories high, this. And while we were there, we got an issue of shaving soap. Well, it's the first we'd ever seen. It was a little square stick, maybe it's about 2 inches long and about 3/4 of an inch thick. Square block of white shaving soap. And I was lying on the top bunk, three bunks high, lying on the top bunk, and my mate came to me and he said, "Keep this in your hand, a little slip of paper, see?" And then he says, "Look," he was an old soldier from India, he said, "Look to the other four blokes," there was five of us in the group, he says, "If we cut this into five, it'll be useless, it'll break to pieces. So whoever picks the winning ticket out, keeps it, the whole block, see?" So, of course, the cap was full of blanks. So he's handing them out, and then he says to me, "Come on, pick out the hat." I said, "What's the matter?" Pretending sleep. He says, "Pick some out the hat." And I opened this, what I already had in my hand. I says, "It's got an S on." He says, "You've won the soap." They were up to all sorts of tricks, you know. And then, well, after that.
How were the huts heated?
Well, stoves. Stoves. We had about two stoves in the middle, which we used to cook on, any Red Cross stuff we had, anything like that. Make a drink of tea, see. And at that time, we'd got hold of quite a few books had been sent.
So you mentioned that you had library books coming in.
Did I? Oh, well.
Was the Red Cross, that would be through the Red Cross, presumably?
That would be through the Red Cross, yeah.
Were they sending anything else to...
Well, I got cigarettes and tobacco from the regiment. The regiment sent me. And also, I used to get tobacco sent from the Durham Miners. They sent tobacco occasionally. Quite a while since I'd worked the mines, but funny enough, they sent me tobacco. And then occasionally you'd get a Red Cross parcel from home, which was clothing, like, you know, a vest or a pullover or something like that. See, and then after that...
You were getting letters coming in from home.
Yes,
okay.
Yes. But they were about, took them about a month, you know, for a letter to arrive.
Had they been opened by the Germans before?
Oh, yes, they were all censored.
And presumably yours was censored going out?
Yes, they would be. And then, well, we were given special letters, you know, like a postcard sort of thing. So it was easy for them to... There was a German photographer came in, taking troops of the German soldiers, and I managed to get that one taken with about five of us on in the snow, you know. So,
how was the camp itself organised? You obviously had the German element, which was there to keep you in. Were you under your own discipline?
Under your own discipline in the camp, yes.
And the senior man was what rank?
When he be a British officer, but it was always anything addressed to the camp was to the senior British officer. See, I'm not sure whether we had a doctor there. See, and we were at the top of the building, and we were the first company of this 40th Battalion. That was the German Labour and Building Battalion. Now, apparently, we were the 40th, so there must have been at least 39 other German battalions like us, see?
Did you ever get any men that refused to work for the Germans?
No. You pretended to work. You acted on as if you were working. And
you did a little bit of your own sabotage, in a sense.
Exactly. exactly.
As you did with the sand.
Oh, exactly. We did when we moved to this other camp. We were moved way down south into what I think it's known as Oberschlesien. Yeah?
And when was this?
From this camp, that'd be about the middle of 42, and we moved in. And up to then, you know, Poland, well, there was no bombing. It was too far from for any aeroplanes to reach. And Russia, of course, there were Russian front was near up to Moscow, and the Russian Air Force had been knocked out, so we got no bombing until D-Day, after D-Day.
We'll come to that, of course. When the Germans were winning, you know, taking most of Russia, etc., and successfully...
Oh, you got word of that.
Did you feel that you were, you know, you were just stuck there, you weren't going to win the war, you may be there for years?
No, well, we always thought, well, it was a lot of propaganda. See, we just took it with a grain of salt, all this. Of course, that time when I was working in the soldiers' home, the Hood was sunk. And we got to know of that probably sooner than the people in England. Because any German victories, we got to know of straight away.
They were telling you.
They were telling us. Then we moved to, as I say, we were in this place. Well, we stayed there till the end of the war, really. That was the middle of 42, and we were out working on this vast...
Do you remember the name of the camp?
Heidebreck.
And was added a number, a stalag or what have you?
No, we were just classed as B40.
And this is the Labour Battalion.
Labour Battalion.
Yes.
And there was two of us. There was another Labour Battalion, 20, Labour Battalion 20. And we were all in the same enclosure. And we ran our own affairs and things like that. And you had roll call when the Germans were there on a night time. But apart from that, and this factory, well, the chaps were fiddling all sorts from this factory, you know. They were walking in with all sorts of things. We had, there were laying cables, and all the rubber bands around the cables, the coloured plastic plastic bands, we took them off, and we had a set of cowboys and Indians, and of course this all decorated the costume when we were acting on the stage. And we had various sports days and things like that, you know.
What was the accommodation like in this new camp?
Well, it was wooden huts, and 20 men to a hut with a stove in the middle. It wasn't too bad, the accommodation, like. But the grub was about the same, you know, a bowl of soup and a fifth of a loaf. That was it, like. But of course, we occasionally used to get the Red Cross in. And when a truck came in with the Red Cross, where it was jubilation in the camp, you know, and you got these parcels issued, and you could go out and fiddle with what stuff you had, you know.
Is it black market, bartering?
Yes, with the Poles or the even the Germans. I mean, there was a German there, he was a Nazi with a little badge, and he would barter with you. And
did you have any problems with Gestapo coming into the camp? Or?
Well, one occasion, they reckoned there was that much stuff walking off the factory into the camp, that all sorts of gadgets, you know, in the camp, and then they sent this Gestapo man, and he sort of had snap searches coming in, see. So what we did, we had a chap had a clothesline, you know, and your German towel was just like a tea towel, white tea towel, see. And when the Germans were searching, these were chaps that looked after the billets while you were out, see. And he would hang this white tea towel out on the line, and you could see it from the factory. And they would say, take nothing in today, lads, and they're searching, see. And when it stopped searching, down came the towel. It's all right now, lads, the towel's gone, you carry it. So that's how we got through that. But they still caught us with things, you know. They used to have, the lads used to be allowed to carry a bit of firewood in for to light your fire. And in the middle of the firewood, you would have a couple of eggs, see. And if the Germans got your firewood, you clustered down, so you made sure you broke the eggs. Or if you had one egg, you'd hand them your coat to search, and you had your egg in there, in your hand, and you hand them your, they were searching your coat, right? You still carried on with your egg. That you got up to all sorts of tricks and that to get stuff in.
We didn't establish what kind of factory you were working in.
A big chemical factory, IG Farben. It was, I worked later at the ICI, and it was similar. Walking through this German factory and walking through the ICI was similar. The girder work and the things. And in this factory, it was massive. We were just sort of building it. And I think the idea of the Germans was to have it so far out of any bombing, it was safe. See, because you worked day and night. Why, we didn't. We didn't work at night, but the factory did. And they were getting on to producing petrol out of coal. And they were filling tanks of it, you know.
And you were labouring, was that the kind of work?
Well, more or less, yes. We worked one time for a firm that built the Siegfried Line. You know, concreting. There was a lot of concreting done.
Was there no one that protested, particularly from the higher, you know, the higher ranks of India, that this would be war work, that prisoners of war shouldn't be doing?
Well, our higher ranks were two doctors. See? And
So you just kept on doing this work?
You just talked as slow as you could. Yes. And as badly as you could, you know. So we were on digging trenches for these cables. And some of them were great thick cables, you know. And as I say, we pinched all the identification of them. So when they dug a cable up, they wouldn't know which cable went where. And any machinery we came across in the factory, we dismantled that, you know. They had some machinery from America, you know, control machinery, delicate machinery. Well, we put that out of use. And anything we could, anything with oil in, tipped the oil out and it was finished. They couldn't replace it. Or screw parts off any machinery, you know, and dismantle it. We did a lot of that. I mean, a fella put sand in, they had a shunting engine, used to go around, dismantled that. Well, we sabotaged that, putting sand in where the water was. And all sorts of tricks we had for sabotaging them.
This must have made the Germans pretty angry. They must have known that.
Oh, it was unknown. It was unknown to them.
They didn't know
because a lot of the time you were out there with, there was that much need for the German front that they had German civilians coming in, see? And some of these German civilians were, well, they were pretty friendly. They weren't soldiers and they were just an armband and they were working all day and then called out at night to man the anti-aircraft guns that surrounded the place, see? But it didn't bother them because there was no aircraft coming over, so they'll probably have a good nap, see?
So how far was your camp in relation to the factory?
Oh, just
quite close.
Quite close.
Well, any bombing raid on the factory could well have hit your camp.
It did.